and a very warm welcome to Singapore and Changi International Airport. The local time is 4:30 in the afternoon.
Hi, this is Jackie Ong. I'm the chair of the scientific committee here in Singapore. Welcome to Singapore.
So welcome to Pitch Pod number 4. This is the second of our Singapore specials, and we're recording on a glorious Nottingham day in the open air today.
I think we ought to be discussing the role of teamwork and simulation in CPR. One of the things that we do so infrequently is CPRs, fortunately, because the number of children dying in hospitals so few and far between. Yet the one thing that we tend not to do regularly is have frequent training in this exercise. It happens once a year, once twice a year in certain teams, and yet one of the newer model is to have many practices all the time, and I feel that, you know, it's something that we ought to be introducing to our hospitals. What do you think?
So I spoke to Betsy Hunt whilst out in Singapore. She's the associate professor and director of the John Hopkins Simulation Centre, and she gave a great talk entitled "Resuscitation Team Training and What Works Best." Let's play the interview and then we can talk about it after that, okay? So I've got Betsy Hunt here, who works in Baltimore in Maryland. Has just given a great talk on her systems of training and resuscitation. And one thing I want to ask you about, Betsy, is about your idea of a CPR coach. So what is that and how does it work?
Yeah, glad to talk about it. So the idea is to have a member of the team who's very much focused on the high quality CPR, and that person is essentially unloading the leader of the team. So the leader can focus on the advanced life support, and essentially the leader can look at what is the rhythm, what is the PALS or APLS algorithm, and what is the reversible cause. And the leader doesn't need to be worrying about, you know, is there high quality CPR going on, because they know that the coach is coaching the compressor. The coach is making sure that there's excellent depth, that there's excellent rate, that there's a good recoil. And in the meantime, every once in a while, the leader checks in with the coach and says, you know, good quality. And then the leader can go back to making sure that they're addressing reversible causes.
There can be a huge amount of noise in CPR situations. Is it a possibility that the CPR coach just adds noise and adds some confusion? Who's in charge and who do I listen to? You know, the people who are doing the CPR, who are doing the compressions, who's their leader, who's their boss?
That's a great question. Initially, we didn't necessarily map out where the coach stands. So if the coach stands down towards the foot of the bed, it definitely confuses people because you have the voices close to each other. And if the coach is loud, it can be a problem. But if the coach is standing more up at the chest, across from the compressor, it tends to not be a problem, because if they're using sort of a low voice, looking in the eyes of the compressor and talking directly to them, it doesn't seem to add to the noise, and it doesn't seem to be confusing to people about who's the leader.
Does the coach and the leader have to know each other? Would that help? I mean, is that a human thing? Because someone who just rocks up and says, I'm now the quality person or the CPR coach. So presumably if you have allocated people, I mean, like you mentioned in your talk about fellows who do this, how do you designate them, and how do people know who everyone is?
So I think that certainly it helps if people know each other, but as the institution gets used to the idea, it's really not necessary. So for instance, our pediatric emergency department has done a very nice job of training a large cohort of their nurses. And so when the emergency department nurse is standing next to the defibrillator and they say, I'm the CPR coach, and they start pointing to the numbers on the defibrillator across from the compressor, the leader says, oh good, and they're just happy to have that person standing in that position, and they just are soothed that the person's up there, and they don't really mind if they know that person or not. They're just happy to see the person standing in that position.
That's a great idea, and I hope it catches on, because as a leader, you know, it's so confusing and so much to think about. The last thing you want to do is to be measuring your CPR compression depth, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's one of those things that can just just really, as we say, cognitively unload you and allow you to be able to concentrate on those more trickier concepts.
So I tell my trainees all the time, actually, CPR is not complicated. It really is. It's not a busy time, you know. In asystolic CPR, you're doing one stroke every 4 minutes.
Exactly.
I mean, you're not doing much, and yet it's incredibly stressful.
And one of the things that we do is we have the documenter interact very well with the coach. So if the documenter is saying, it's been 2 minutes, switch. And so if the documenter and the coach are working together to switch the compressors every 2 minutes and give epi every 4 minutes, that really unloads the leader.
You also had a slide up about Formula One teams or NASCAR to translate for Americans, and saying how they change tyres and so on. We actually had a great day out with a very, very grateful parent who took us to the Air Force Simulation Centre, and they were asking us about our simulation program, and we said, well, yeah, we know when we kind of have a moment, we try to do a bit of simulation. And they were appalled, and they said, well, what we do is we have a team who is a forward team who do the fighting and the flying and the Air Force business. And then there's a whole rearward team who do simulation and training. And so I said, well, that's great. You know, if we had a hospital doing the patient bit and a hospital doing the training, we'd be really good as well.
Yeah.
And so I get quite frustrated sometimes when people compare us to Formula One teams who train 1,000 times for the same thing, or to aviation, who spends half their time training, and we don't have that. So how can we get better? And when being compared to these people who've got unlimited resources basically, and we don't. How do we do that? How do we get better at simulation without those unlimited resources?
It's a great question. I think you're right. We can't use the same model as they do, but I think there's opportunities to do some of these just-in-time training opportunities. Peter Weinstock from Boston is a good friend of mine, and he gives the great comparisons of Seve Ballesteros and how he would, you know, of course, take that shot right before, you know, practice shot right before you're, you know, in the golf match, you know, and same thing for anybody who's in a orchestra. Of course, they do the practice, you know, right before you do, you know, your you know, big performance, and we don't even do that. And so when we think of a child who's coming in from retrieval and we're ready, well, there is an opportunity sometimes for us for 4 or 5 minutes to do something. And so if we think about, is there something we could do in the next 4 or 5 minutes, or is there something we could do before our shift, we probably can think about Dr. Ned Carney from CHOP and Dana Niles have talked about these rolling refreshers, or my colleague who talked about these 15-minute quarterly refreshers and how that can make a difference in time to defibrillation. I think we don't always have to think of the big, intense simulations, but some of these other things that we can do that are maybe smaller doses but can have a big impact.
To finish off with another golfing quote, Gary Player said, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So we all need luck in medicine, and maybe we should practice more. Thank you, Betsy. That's fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I appreciate that.
That was really fascinating. I think, you know, it's amazing how much one can learn from other people's experiences. And what I really liked about her talk was this concept of using every minute that you have to do any mini simulations around. The idea of waiting for the patient to arrive is as good a time as any to simulate and ask questions instead of having another cup of coffee. What do you think?
The idea of a practice shot is brilliant, I thought. And at that point, when you've been called, the crash beep has gone off, you're all down and ready waiting for the patient, and you know they're coming in. You know, doing simulation with other people, with people who may not be there when you actually need them. That makes no sense. What you should be doing is training with a team who are going to be doing it. And in this situation, when you're waiting for the patient, that's the ideal time to have a few practice rounds of CPR.
Absolutely. This idea of having a coach is something I'd never heard of. Had you, Patrick?
No, nor me. And I was worried a bit about the noise aspect and the confusion aspect. You know, CPR can be stressful. It can be a bit noisy sometimes. And will this add to it? But Betsy was quite clear that this actually decreases noise, both the decibels and also just the mental noise as well.
The idea of having a coach is, I think, absolutely wonderful, because it just supports the rest of the team, and I feel that the leader has somebody to turn to if things go suddenly very wrong.
Yeah. And my worries about noise are also potentially cultural as well. We try to run our CPRs very, very calmly and very quietly. I don't know if it'll work in all cultures and all medical systems. Where, I mean, my only experience of North American CPRs is what I see on TV, and it seems a bit more noisy than what we do.
Well, I agree, but I think with the coach around and with the team that's built around the coach and the leader, things could be well controlled without the drama.
Yeah, so hopefully so. My point about the F1 training and the aviation analogies, it does frustrate me, it really does, because how can we be compared to systems which are so well set up for simulation, where simulation is an integral part of their job, and we try to bolt it on?
Well, I think perhaps it's now time to make sure that simulation is as much part of our daily activity as it is for them, because it's as important in our work as theirs, really.
And well, it is. That needs resources, and unfortunately, probably that ship has sailed, doesn't it? Because we can't now say, well, we need 1.5 times as many staff, because we need to spend long time simulating.
But perhaps having these mini sessions frequently may be the way forward.
Yeah.
Maybe a start, and then perhaps we can expand on that.
Yeah, we started a program until our simulator doll broke. We're getting a new one soon, hopefully. But until then, we were running something which we call micro sims, which were essentially really, really quick simulations, as in 30 seconds or 1 minute long, where just at random you're called into a room and said, you know, this tube's blocked, bang, deal with it.
Well, this is so. In a way, this is what you've already started this. So perhaps this could be expanded to involve and incorporate CPR procedures.
Yeah. But it does need keen nurses. It does need keen doctors. Yeah. It does need the mental space to do that.
Yeah.
Clearly, when we were absolutely rammed full over winter, then there was none of that going on.
But perhaps that's as good a time as any to have these mini sessions, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Perhaps.
I'm being a taskmaster.
You are. Here. You are. But then we also need the physical space for it as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in summary, the things I've learned from Betsy's talk was that putting in a CPR coach in would be really easy, even if it's not formalised yet in our practice. And the practice shot, having a resource doll in ED, which we could just do practices before the patient arrives, both of those are really, really clever ideas. They're easy wins, and they're low resource. Let's do that tomorrow.
I'm very impressed. Go for it.
Thank you. Until next time.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to London Heathrow. The local time is approaching 5:40 in the morning.